This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Corey Rosenbusch, President and CEO of the Fertilizer Institute. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with TFI's Corey Rosenbusch next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net. Providing individualized protection on more than 540 million acres of farmland, crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. While the nation's farmers and ranchers wait for a new farm bill, much attention is also being given to the Treasury Department and rules that will be written to determine which feedstocks will qualify for tax credits provided under the Inflation Reduction Act. TFI's Corey Rosenbusch says the 40B rules generated a lot of questions toward nutrient management that he hopes will be resolved in the upcoming 45Z rules.
When the B came out, a lot of the media started to report on this green fertilizer. And so, you know, cover crops, no-till, green fertilizer is kind of what hit the airwaves. That created a lot of confusion. We had a lot of phone calls on that because when the industry starts talking about green fertilizer, we start thinking about green ammonia, which just is not in production here in the U.S. yet. It's right around the corner. I mean, you know, definitely this year, but there's just not the volumes of that. As you started to peel back the onion, what they were really talking about were the use of some of these specialty products, some of the inhibitors, some of the slow-release technologies. Even went as far as naming some of those products. So that was a good start. I think, you know, we were pleased to see that was one of those three requirements and, that there was recognition of the four R's and the use of a few of those products. We hope as that transitions to Z that there's an even broader, umbrella of those products that can fit underneath there. And one of them is some of the low carbon ammonia stuff. There's tremendous potential with some of the carbon sequestration, some of the electrolyzers that are about to go online with ammonia production, and then also just the broader range of technologies with some of the inhibitors and coatings and slow-release technology that's out there. But that's still to be determined. I mean, we've seen the RFI from the USDA. I think generally speaking, from a fertilizer perspective, they're asking the right questions. They're asking about 4R nutrient stewardship and trying to understand all these products. And that's the big question is how do we categorize and think about all the different products now? There aren't just, you know, the traditional NPKs anymore.
Corey, if you had an audience with the big four, Ms. Stabenow, Mr. Bozeman, Mr. Thompson, and certainly Mr. Bishop, what are the things that you would want from the fertilizer industry included in this new farm bill whenever it comes?
Well, it's a good question. And for the most part, we were pleased that a lot of those items from the fertilizer perspective are in there. You know, I think the low-hanging fruit or one of the priorities is to allow our ag retail agronomists, our CCAs, to be the technical service providers to help deploy some of the conservation dollars that are available, break that logjam and get some of that money into, to growers' hands, make it more accessible. So that one would be one. The other one is just the conversation around, domestic supply channels. And, I testified a couple weeks ago at the House Natural Resources Committee to see if they would waive jurisdiction to include potash and phosphate on the critical minerals list. When you think about those two minerals and fertilizer products, you've got Belarus and Russia who control about 40% of the potash in the world, supply of potash. And then from a phosphate perspective, you know, China has a significant amount, about 30 to 40% of the phosphate in the world. And so We have some of those resources here, but our limiting factor is the permitting process to be able to access them, get them processed into fertilizers that farmers can use. And so anything you can do to mitigate some of that supply shock is going to help the grower. And, of course, we saw that as Russia invaded Ukraine, as China restricted their fertilizer exports, and because it's a globally traded commodity, that supply and demand impacted growers here in the U.S. So those are probably two of the higher priorities. Obviously, there's a biostimulant piece in there in terms of defining of what those biostimulants are. And I think what I would really tell them is just get a farm bill passed. that's what I would really tell them, because I think that's what the grower organizations, I think, are really pushing and hoping for this year.
Well, if you listen to Senator Hovind as he spoke with AgriPulse earlier this week, he said he doesn't just want a farm bill on time. He wants the right farm bill and willing to wait for however much time that happens. Now, have a great deal of gratitude for you spending time with us on this edition of Open Mic, especially given that you have flown in, literally, from Europe with no sleep and willing to talk issues. So thank you. So you're in from an International Fertilizer Association meeting in Europe. Let's talk geopolitical, because things are not calm in the world in some key areas where we count on nutrients to come from.
Absolutely. I mean, there was no shortages of conversation, for sure. It was also an opportunity. We after the market outlook event that went on, we also, as an association and as associations, got together and just kind of had a day of sharing what our key issues are. So we had the European Fertilizer Association, the International Fertilizer Association, the Arab Fertilizer Association. Probably one of the more fascinating conversation was around the Houthi rebels. They are really doing some interesting things to disrupt fertilizer supply chains, because, you know, you've got that Middle East region where you have potash and phosphate and frankly nitrogen that's being produced, but those ships can't go through the Red Sea anymore. And so while we were there, we were actually at Lloyd's of London, talking to some underwriters, that are doing war coverage on some of these vessels. And one of the things that they shared is that the Houthis now have created their own sanction list, and they're delivering written notice to these ships that are carrying the fertilizer or any product, but that are carrying the product, and saying, hey, you are no longer able to pass through here. Next time you do, we're going to bomb you. We're going to shoot you down. We're going to sink you. And so this has become very formal, which was really surprising to me. I think we sit here in the U.S. and think of the Houthis as this kind of ragtag terrorist group, but they're mobilized, they're very formal, they're communicating, they're issuing letters to the vessels, and as a result, the cost of insurance is being driven through the roof, and you're starting to see those vessels having to make their way back down around the Cape of Good Hope and not passing through anymore. So these are things that we don't really think about on a day-to-day basis. And at the end of the day, again, because it's a globally traded commodity, it impacts us here.
So let's pause for just a moment with the issue there in the Red Sea and the Houthis. Is that something that would impact our supply beginning as soon as this fall, when farmers would be preparing then for the 25 crop?
Well, so, I mean, I would say it's already impacting at least the marketplace. The Ruby Mar, that the last vessel that got sunk, that was a fertilizer vessel, and it was going from Saudi to Europe. It was a UK ship, but it was carrying Saudi fertilizer products. So that isn't supply that's coming to the United States per se, but markets are reacting to that. And when a market reacts to that, it definitely spills over here into the U.S. So it's not as if that's where our direct supply is coming from, but it does have an impact.
How about Vladimir Putin, not only from the challenge that he's brought to the Ukraine, but also his influence in the Middle East?
So the hot conversation this week in Europe around Putin was his trip in December to Saudi Arabia, and he met with the Crown Prince while he was there. And there was a lot of coverage of the oil and gas conversations that were going on. I think one of the things that we talked about this week was that he had one of his fertilizer CEOs with him. And part of the conversation was around creating a cartel or a joint selling group, so to speak, a partnership between Russia and Saudi. And so when you think about Russia as the world's largest fertilizer supplier, significant fertilizer resources in Saudi, it would give Russia and Saudi a significant control over a significant amount of the supply. And so from a Putin perspective, the way he's thinking about this is, hey, if I can control fertilizer, I can control food security. And if I can control food security, it allows me to achieve my geopolitical objectives. So those are some scary conversations, a couple over dinner even, that will ruin your appetite. The other very interesting thing that we learned is that part of, you know, Putin obviously has a lot of resources coming in from oil and gas. Fertilizer is a close second. But because of some of the restrictions on gas and because, you know, Europe has basically said, look, we're not going to take Russian gas, he's had to figure out how are we going to monetize gas. So what have they done? They said, our strategy will be let's export gas through fertilizer, because we all know that natural gas is that feedstock for ammonia fertilizer, for all nitrogen fertilizers. And so what they've done in terms of a Russian strategy is convert that natural gas to fertilizer. Fertilizer sanctions and restrictions have been a lot less scrutinized because it's a food security issue. And so that is how he's starting to get around his natural gas issue.
Corey, we've spent a lot of time in agriculture talking about trade, but usually it's about our exports, not necessarily our imports of critical input needs. We've seen shortage in fertilizer, and we've seen what that does to price. With what you're discussing about Russia, with some of the other trade implications that we've had about the imports of fertilizers and other products, how does trade now take another chapter?
Well, I think I would start the answer by saying that if you look at where you hear Secretary Vilsack talking about bolstering domestic supply, and we can have a long conversation around the tools and whether they're effective and, you know, what the real impact is. But philosophically, the thinking is correct, and that is we have critical minerals, phosphate, potash here. We have an abundant supply of natural gas. We need to ensure we have really good policy around natural gas exploration. And so whatever we can do to maximize that domestic supply is good, because we're a net importer. We are a net importer of fertilizer, and we're going to have to rely on foreign countries to supply us. And so the supply chains are constantly shifting. And so as you think about, you know, a CVD case that may impact a certain country, those tons have to be replaced. We still have to have them. The supply isn't going to necessarily change, but we still have to have them. They're just coming in from different regions. So are they coming in from a friendly country or an unfriendly country? Are they coming in from a country that has to go through the Red Sea or not? And in the case of Russia, those supply chains, you know, they were shifted to Brazil. We saw Europe starting then to need to import nitrogen from the U.S. And so, you know, that supply chain dynamic gets really, really fascinating. So, the impact is broad, and all of those import, countries matter and where it's coming from.
Europe has passed legislation and now is beginning to enforce that legislation toward a greener landscape, challenging where they get product and how they get product. How's this going to affect the global supply situation and who's able to sell and do business with the Europeans?
Let me repeat a story that I heard this week, and this is a true story. There was a conversation with a DG, a Director General of the Environment, from Brussels in Europe, and there was a recognition. Someone asked the question, well, don't a lot of these policies basically mean we're going to have widespread famine, we're going to have food security issues? And I can't really describe it, but the answer was, yes, we recognize that. That's just the sacrifice we're going to have to make. There is a philosophy, a lot like religion. This is the best comparison I can. If I'm trying to explain Jesus to somebody, sometimes it's hard to explain logically. That's why they call it faith. And the Europeans have this same philosophy when it comes to some of their environmental policy. And this policymaker just genuinely believed we have to sacrifice human life today so that the planet can live tomorrow. And it just, it blew our mind. It's just not something that we can necessarily fathom, that this is kind of how these policymakers are thinking about things, but it is. And so I think the conversation really is around, will Europe even be able to produce food in the future? So as they've put a price on carbon, and you know they're looking at this 2026 carbon border adjustment mechanism that'll be put into place on fertilizer coming in. You know, you're going to increase the cost of fertilizer by, you know, hundreds of dollars a ton in some cases. So that's going to be good for a European producer. But it's going to still make the cost go up for their farmers there in Europe. So will they even be able to produce into the future? You know, I would argue that it's actually good for U.S. fertilizer companies because it makes us a bit more competitive. But there are some critical policies being made specifically with fertilizer production, some of the carbon border adjustment taxes, that'll be put into place that's going to significantly change the landscape of fertilizer produced in Europe as well as food and how it's produced in Europe. And yep. Today they still have about 30% of their nitrogen curtailed because some of the challenges of production costs.
Do you think Europe will have enough influence to change the way Brazil produces crops to meet their standards toward deforestation?
No, I don't. I don't believe that, just from some of the conversations with my colleagues, that the entire world is just going to completely change the way they do things in order to meet a European philosophy. Just my personal opinion.
Don't you find a challenge to the mindset that we've had in agriculture, and I don't think just in the U.S., but global, we've always had a desire to provide an ample, a safe, and affordable food for the populace. And now there is this movement that suggests we want it this way or not at all?
Yeah, I mean, my colleague that runs Fertilizers Europe was saying that they expect Europeans to go to an all-vegetarian diet, that those are just the sacrifices, the caloric sacrifices that will have to be made in order to meet the goals. I just it blows my mind to think about it, but that's how the thinking is right now.
So let's move to another area as we begin to close. What effort do you see now inside the fertilizer industry towards sustainability in the production and the provision of nutrients that farmers need?
The industry's investments in sustainability have never been stronger. You know, our most recent sustainability report was tracking billions of dollars on average on an annual basis in sustainability, both in terms of process but also product. So we've talked a lot about the four R's. We talked a lot about new product innovation as well. But what's interesting to combine some of the policy that we saw in the IRA with some of the sustainability initiatives will be how we will incentivize low carbon ammonia production. And this was a very hot topic as well that we were talking about this week in Europe, because you know they are, I will say, I will credit them, they are leading the way on this. And they were quite angry when the IRA passed because a European producer looked at me and said, you just shifted the entire low-carbon ammonia landscape from Europe to the United States, because those incentives now allow producers here to pencil out. I think we had something like 16 new ammonia producers announce intentions to start low-carbon ammonia plants. And so, anyways, we are trying to get away from the color scheme, but what we have recognized is that as the 45Q tax credits come online, as these become commercially viable products, whether that be for cargo ships that are gonna be fueled by ammonia, whether those are Asian countries like Japan that are gonna use ammonia as their energy source for residences and commercial electricity. There needs to be a little bit of standard here, and just calling something blue or green isn't going to do it. So we've been working with 5 ammonia producers here in the U.S. to create a low-carbon ammonia standard. So it'll actually be a verified ammonia carbon intensity score that they will have for their ammonia plants. And then they can enter into the agreements and say, hey, here's the carbon intensity score of this ammonia. What'll be really interesting is to see how then it starts to intersect into agriculture. Will food companies say, hey, farmer, if you grow a crop using ammonia with a carbon intensity score of X or lower, we will pay you a premium for that product. That's a very near future event for us. I can see some of these technologies becoming very real in the next year.
Corey, whether it be by genetic engineering in the plants that we raise, or whether specialty products that are in the works now, do you see a day that producers will be able to produce as much or more with less nutrient?
I think there will always be a nutrient demand. I think the word less is the question in terms of what does that mean? Does that mean less tons of phosphate, or does that mean that it's going to be less phosphate need, but perhaps in a different form? That's what I'm not exactly sure what that answer is going to be, but I think there's always going to be demand for crop nutrients. I think with some of the policies that I've at least heard about this week, I think the U.S. farmer is going to be asked to even do more on the land that we have to supply the planet. I don't know that any of our member companies are afraid that those nutrient requirements are going to go away. I think what they're seeing is an innovation in how they are manufactured and developed in a form that is more efficient for the plant to use. And that's what you can see when you go to their websites, when you listen to their public company hearings, when you see their investments in some of these specialty products.
Well, Corey Rosenbusch, I want to thank you again for taking time to be with us on this edition of Open Mic. You made a tremendous effort for this conversation to take place, and we certainly appreciate your effort. Thanks for your effort on behalf of our agriculture industry and the nutrients that keep farmers in the field and being productive. This is Open Mic, Corey, and today you have the microphone for the last word.
Well, I just want to say thanks to all the farmers and growers out there. At the end of the day, I think one thing that is crystal clear to me as I come back into the U.S. is that the American farmer is strong, they're smart, they're efficient, they're effective. We need strong policies to ensure that they can continue that. And as a country, and really as a society, we're only as effective as they are at producing our country's food and fuel and fiber supply.
Our thanks to Corey Rosenbusch, President and CEO of the Fertilizer Institute, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.